thing again. Is challenged with that. I heard somebody say not long ago that that we'll all be exposed and we'll all have this in some way or other. And that might be true. But human beings are tough. We've been here for a very long time. And we faced other things in the past. We have recorded history of some of those things. And it takes the weakest and the most disabled among us. But life will go on. KK4JBQ.
Hey, nothing I can do about it, or me or her can do about it. Nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing. So, if you can't do nothing about it, then just lean forward, I guess. That's all you can do. Just, I don't know. But, I won't be negative too soon. This is just so frail. It's just, you know. But anyway, on a lighter note, I ordered some LMR 400 the other day, and it came in. And, that stuff is pretty stiff. That's about like a copper rod, to be honest with you. Exactly, that's going to be quite a challenge, but it's something else, really. So we'll see how that goes, terminate the ends or whatnot, but I'm anxious to get started and start trying to get some ends on it, I guess. But the other thing, let me let this drop there. I'll be right back. I made a modification to my Slim Jim today, since we're in quarantine. So instead of soldering in where the feed point is for SWR adjustment, I've got machined some lugs that goes on the pipe that are adjustable, so I can tweak SWR just a little bit better, because the J-pole, the SWR is pretty simple, pretty easy to set, but this Slim Jim, man, I don't know whether it's the gain that's messing with me or what, but it's just been a struggle to get it under 1.2. But I had a little bit more success today, and just interesting journey with this thing. I've been messing with it now for 3 or 4 days, so it's kind of interesting to see how all this is working.
I can tell that it's a great challenge, but imagine how good it'll feel when you have met the challenge. It will feel that much better. The antennas are a mystery, I think, and that's why they are so attractive to anybody in this hobby, of course. I may have told you once, and I'm given to repeat myself. Forgive me if I'm going over ground. You've been with me before, but when I lived at home, a kid, Daddy had an antenna on the roof for television. And I took a special interest in the issues of receiving TV channels, because when I was a kid and we had, you know, black and white TV, and every 6 months or so we'd have to replace a tube in it and all that. Well, it had, for the longest time, and I don't know what the delay was, but for the longest time, we had a vertical hold. The tube in there was responsible for a vertical hold became weak. So Dad said, Larry, get on over there and twiddle that knob and get that roll out of there. You know, I don't know if you're acquainted with what TVs of that era, how they acted. But the picture would just roll and roll and roll. And so he saw that I could get that done. And he says, okay, now the volume up a little bit. Okay, now switch over to the other channel. And we had three channels at the time, or maybe it was two. That's right. We had two channels at the time. So switch on over to the other channel for me. So I became my dad's remote control. And I'll always think that my poor eyesight is because I lay underneath the television to be closer so I could make adjustment for him on the fly. Well, anyway, we had a 300 ohm twin lead that brought the signal into the house from the antenna on the roof. And I have thought since I've been in this hobby and learned so much more about antennas that it would have been a much better thing if I knew just a little more at that point in my life, and I could have helped him, really made an improvement in the signal, maybe pulled in, this was East Tennessee on the other side of the mountains, and so getting channel 13 WLOS TV in Asheville was almost impossible. And at the time, my favorite Saturday morning program was Mr. Bill and Bozo the Clown. And it came in snowy. A weak signal with that kind of television, the picture was just real snowy. KK4JBQ.
That big console TV, big Zenith, and had two dials on it for the channels, and then had I can't remember if it had a horizontal adjustment, but I do remember the vertical. I don't think it was vertical hole. It was, I can't remember what it was called, vertical something, but there would be just lines that just scroll across the screen, and sometimes you could adjust it and it wouldn't make any difference. You let it warm up a little bit and you could adjust it, or let it smack it with a broom and it quit. And we had channel 4, channel 7, 13, and channel 16 and 29. 16 was a religious channel. Channel 29 was PBS, and that was about it. But my favorite show growing up was Shop Theater. I think it was black and white. I don't remember any of the episodes. I just remember being scared to death. And Mama come in there and fuss at me for watching it and wouldn't let me watch it at night because I'd get scared and have nightmares. But Shock Theater and $6 Million Man, Leave It to Beaver, and of course everybody's favorite, Andy Griffith. But I remember the. I didn't know they had tubes in them, but I do remember the. Well, I guess the screen is a big tube in itself. But back then, I didn't know. You know, I just knew Mom would hit it with a broom every now and then. It quit acting up. But my grandmother, she was Appalachian. Or mountain people, and on my mama's side, and she didn't have a TV, she had a radio, and I remember sitting around her listening to the radio in the afternoons when we got done working, but that was interesting too. radio. It'd come on maybe Saturday nights, I believe, is when it was. We didn't do much TV. We had three kids, and we just spend time with them instead of so much TV. We watched a little bit, though, but boy, Saturday night came around, and we always had to find out what was going on, like where we were going. And that was entertainment. You know, I enjoyed this and that. I'm sure it was all reruns. But Garrison Keeler, I believe it was. But yeah, we remember that, sitting around listening to that. And when my great grandparents died, father inherited the Graffinola and or Victrola. I forget which one it was called. Anyway, we got it when Granddaddy died. He passed it on to me, and we got it over here in the house. And we listened to it every Christmas because we got all the records with it. Had probably 50, 75 records. And my favorite is Y'all Come. I forget who sings it. But, and then we listened. Great-grandmother had a bunch of Bing Crosby. So at Christmas time, we'll listen to Bing Crosby. No speakers, there's a speaker on it, but no electrical adjustment. You open or close the doors to increase the sound or to muffle the sound. And I mean, it still works. It works good. Big old thick needle. Every time you play the record, it kind of eats the record up. Each time you play it, it kind of destroys the record, I guess. That's why we don't play it that much. But yeah, we all sit around. We still sit around, especially at Christmas time. That's a big deal around here. Sit around and listen to Bing Crosby on the Graffinola, you know. Oh, the days, bud. Oh, the days. KO4NUE.
All of that brought back many memories for me. And, yeah. We're fortunate, you and I and others, others who had that same kind of upbringing, to have had a family life like that. What you had to say there made me think of another thing I hadn't thought of in a very long time. I remember I was a young child, and whenever we were visiting with my grandparents, I mean, I was so young that it was, I still had a nap time, you know. So I'd be put down for a nap. I couldn't have been more than three, maybe four. So I was put down for a nap, and their entertainment among my grandparents, they had a radio, but they didn't use it that much, you know, because the conversation was everything. Conversation about crops and about feed prices and about animals and things like that. They were farm people, you know. Well, that was entertainment. And I have thought many times about how nice that was to listen to as I drifted off to sleep. I couldn't understand what they were saying. Even if I could hear it very well, I couldn't understand what they were saying at that age. But the droning sound of human voice in a distance, it made for a very peaceful sleep. I'm glad I have that memory. One thing that I've wished many times, is that somebody in my family would have been musically inclined. Somebody would have had a guitar, a fiddle, a mandolin, a banjo, anything. Because music that you make yourself is some of the happiest, that that's the best thing for the human spirit, I think, music. But I don't think anybody was. Never experienced that. I learned to use music outside of my family because neither my parents played anything. My dad liked to sing. His favorite singer to mimic, and he did a pretty good job, was George Jones, if you're familiar. And he would shave with a straight razor. He would stand in front of a mirror and shave with a straight razor and sing like George Jones. KK4JPQ.
KK4NUE, George, otherwise known as the Possum, I believe. But, yeah, some of those old memories back that growing up with Grandma and Granddad, I don't remember a whole lot about my great-grandparents. I do remember Grandmother was very stern. I remember being afraid of her. But Granddaddy was just a gentleman. I don't know why I remember him being gentle. I just remember him being that way. But my grandfather, before he passed away, I spent a lot of time with him. And he'd always tell me stories about great-granddad and him growing up. And, man, I love listening to those stories because he just had a way of telling things, I guess. But, I'd be part of my history. I was always inquisitive about it. But I enjoyed listening to him talk. My great-grandfather was, I'm not sure what the word is, but he was some kind of carpenter that was a master carpenter or something. Granddaddy called it something. I can't remember exactly what the word was, but he got a contract, a partial contract, to build some of the barracks at Fort Bragg and a couple of the barracks at Fort Jackson on Tank Hill. And Pappy was always telling me stories about him going to Fort Bragg during the war. Things was rationed. And he'd tell me about rationing and why they rationed and this, that, and the other. And, Granddaddy was working up at Fort Bragg one year and was building a barracks at the end of the airstrip up there. And of course, I wasn't even alive, but just what, Pappy was telling me. And he'd been up there building for a couple months at a time. You had to save up, according to Granddad now, you had to save your ration tickets to get enough fuel to, where you could do something or drive in a vehicle. One day, great-granddad Ernest was working on a barracks at the end of an airstrip, and they were doing training flights with some kind of airplane, and they'd spin the airplane around, and then they had 55-gallon drums with these hand pumps that would fill the tanks on the aircraft. They'd fly off again. Well, there'd always be just a little bit of fuel left in the bottom of the 55-gallon drum that the hand pump couldn't get out. So the guy that was doing the fueling, he just turned drums upside down and poured the rest of the fuel out on the ground. So Granddaddy went over and told him. He says, "Man," he says, I wish you wouldn't do that, because I've been up here for months at a time wanting to wanting to go home. I can't save enough ration tickets to get enough fuel to go home. And when, you know, when you pour that fuel out on the ground like that, it just, that's just hard to watch. So the guy over the fueling doing the, with the 55-gallon drum says, well, I'll tell you what, he says, I'll start saving you some of it. And you get that saved up. That'll help you with rations to get, few rations to get home. I guess Granddaddy thought anything about it. But this is Pappy telling me this now. But I guess it was aviation grade gasoline or some kind of special gasoline or something. And Pappy, Granddaddy saved enough and got about halfway home and burnt the tops of the pistons. Burnt the tops off a couple of pistons because the cetane level was so high in the fuel, and ended up between here and Bragg for a couple of weeks trying to get the truck fixed because it just, I guess, melted the top of the pistons and all. But that's the kind of stories that, you know, my granddad would always tell me about Granddaddy. And I guess that's what made him a gentleman, I guess, through his stories. But it's just something me and Dave still talk about that to this day, Pappy telling that story.
It's a hole you can fall into, I'm afraid. And it makes for, you know, a funny, sad story later on. But a little bit of knowledge, and you know where the fill tube is on a car. That may be all you need. You know, not to pour water in there, and antifreeze don't go in there.
No,
not antifreeze. And well, but anything else that's a fuel. And not understanding that everything is calibrated for a certain octane of fuel, a certain grade of fuel, that can be a mystery still. But if you have an opportunity, and that's resulted in some damage to engines along the way, I'm sure. But then, too, other people, whether they heard that story or somebody else's that did a similar thing, they devised an engine, diesel I'm thinking, an engine that would run on a lot of different kinds of fuel, even peanut oil, you know. So I'm out of my depth here because I can't talk engines, but I do know that when I go to fill the tank in my car, I select the right grade of fuel, and I have a preference for the company I get it from, and I don't change. My dad would do this. He would just stop wherever and get whatever fuel there was, and he was always working on his cars. This was good for me because I learned a great deal about carbureted engines anyway. Because Dad always had to work on his cars. He just, you know, he was a shade tree mechanic, as it was. But anyway, good learning environment for me. He never owned a diesel engine. Didn't understand them. Maybe he wished he had. But, oh, anyway, that is a funny story. And misfortune can be funny after the fact. It's terrible in the moment, but after the fact, it can be a good tale. KK4JBQ.
And my grandmother, she's still alive. She's 92, 93, I think. And she's on the Loftus side of the family, so she always tell me about Granddad Loftus, her father. And I don't remember him, but I just remember everybody in the family talking about how stern he was. And Daddy remembers him, and Dad had a lot of respect for him as a child, but Daddy States does so much mischief that I guess Granddad Loftus just, you know, he whistled that hide a couple times and caught Daddy one year out at least doing something in the barn he shouldn't have been doing. I forget what it was, messing with the chickens or messing with the pigs or something. And harassing them or something. And Granddad Loftus got it. Boy, got it good. And next year, he's had him out there plowing and caught him taking a break when he should have been sitting and left the mules hitched up or something. I don't remember too much about the Granddaddy side other than what Daddy's told me. Mom never did say too much, you know. But I do remember Daddy's side. Just interesting stories. Pappy was always good at telling them, and I always loved to listen to him. And coincidentally, my granddad was a pretty good cook. And I'd go up there every day with him, watch Gunsmoke or one other show we watched, some kind of West Bonanza. And he always cooked lunch or hot dogs or any certain way you got to cook things, you know. But he passed along a bunch of family recipes to me, and I wrote them down as years go. Went by, and I've got, I don't know, five or six good recipes in there. How to salt cure ham and blackberry jelly, plum jelly, sauerkraut, and sawmill gravy, and turtle stew, and I make some jelly with it over the years, and I always cure a Christmas ham, usually every year. Since COVID's come, we hadn't done it. We hadn't cured ham since then, but 3 days per pound, and we got all the mixture. I know what to put in it, and that's what we have at Christmas every year, is salt cured ham from Granddaddy's recipe. So, good stories, good family. Just, you know, enjoy thinking and talking about them from time to time, I guess. But anyway, well, Larry, listen, I'm on a rough day. I'm spent, and we had a pretty rough night last night. And I don't suspect tonight's gonna be any better. So let me get on out of here. And I enjoyed the conversation last night. That was very healing. Hope I didn't offend anybody. Certainly didn't mean to bore anybody. But anyway, we'll go on a few more minutes, but I'm probably going to cut it a little bit short tonight, Larry, because like I said, we've had a rough day. KO4NUE, KK4JBQ.
I could go on and on, because it sounds like you grew up in a similar environment. I remember learning how to cure ham. My dad was he was not sure why meat tastes different if you bought it in the store, all wrapped up and ready to go. But it certainly did. And so he would get ham, and we would salt cure it. We had a smokehouse built right alongside the tool shed, you know. And I remember how it was to feel, you know, the greasy flesh of ham hock as you massaged it in, you know. And I was just tall enough to reach the top of the table, a youngster. But that's what I did with my dad. Now, with my mom, it was always apple butter every fall. My dad came by I don't know how many gallon copper kettle, and we'd build a fire underneath that kettle, and we'd stir for hours the applesauce, which became apple butter, you know, and learned all about that, enjoyed it. Don't you remember that when you've done that kind of work to put up your food or to make it like that, it tastes so much better on the eating side of it. It just tastes so much better. And, well, I guess that's because of one of the ingredients was the love, you know, and being with your parents and stuff like that. I don't have any grandparents left, and both my parents are gone, and that's just how it is. In your 70s, you don't, you've given up most of your people, you know. But I still have an aunt on my mother's side and one on my dad's side, and I talk with them frequently. And they have revealed a good many family situations that I was never told about, and it's been an education. They're dear people. Yeah, well, anyway, I'm glad last night was as healing as you put it. But for the rest of us here on the other side of that conversation, it was a pleasure and an honor to share that. That was a very personal thing for you to turn loose of and let the world know. I know those of us who were on this side of the conversation really appreciated it. Thank you.
Put the things out in years. I just don't know how we quite got on that, but at any rate, like I said, I hope it didn't offend anybody or you or anything, but anyway, well, Larry, I have appreciated the QSO, and really appreciated being able to talk with you so much, but tonight I'm gonna have to go early. I'm tired, and I know we've probably got a rough night. So let me get on out of here, and I'll keep in touch with you. I'll stay checked in with the net, and so on and so forth. And I'm gonna bug on out. So this is KO4NUE, and I'm clear, Larry. Appreciate the talk, and I appreciate you. I'll talk to you later. I'm gone.
Just remember that there are people out here that will always be here to listen and to share. Life at whatever stage you're in, whatever age or whatever situation you're in, can be a rough thing. And it helps to thin that out quite a bit by adding friendship to the mix. It really does help. And there are many people out here who would be a friend to you. KK4JBQ, wishing everybody listening a happy and good night. 73.
All good on my end. God bless everybody. 73.